Did Miss Newland say anything to you, Miss Martin, while you were out on the river that could suggest where she might go if she was planning to kill herself?
Yes. There was something. We were well up through the parks, and I struck a bad bit of water and nearly lost the pole. I remember saying it would be a very nasty place to go in because of the weeds. She asked if that was where a man had been drowned last year.
We present Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter Wimsey and Joanna David as Harriet Vane in Gaudy Night by Dorothy L. Sayers.
Who's coming with me?
I will.
We'll need torches and blankets, hot coffee and brandy. And we'd better get the police to send a constable to rendezvous with us at Tim's boathouse.
I will see to that. I shall be thankful for something to do.
Our boat crept slowly downstream. The constable crouched in the bows, swept the beam of a powerful torch from bank to bank.
Hold on a minute. There's something here. Oh, no. No, nothing but a bit of sacking.
Ready, then? Paddle. Is that the Bursa's boat coming up towards us?
Yes, it is.
There she is.
She's thrown herself in. Paddle like blazes.
Take care, ladies. Don't run her down.
Easy, back a bit.
Over by the willows there. Fetch the boat round a bit more.
A white patch glimmered up to the surface and sank again. The constable leaned out, groping with both hands among the river weeds.
Have you got her?
Yeah, just about. The weeds are cruel strong.
Oh, mind you, don't go over as well.
The girl's head was out of the water, dead white with dark strips of weed.
Right. Right, make for the bank at once.
And is the wretched child out of danger?
Oh, yes. She'd only been in the water a few minutes.
Has she said anything?
She says why couldn't we leave her alone? I told her not to be an inconsiderate little ass.
But you must see, Warden, that this changes everything. We've got to call in expert help and risk the consequences. Any scandal is better than a suicide and an inquest.
You're right, of course.
The girl's parents are not likely to keep quiet about it. If she'd succeeded in drowning herself, we'd have been surrounded by police and reporters by now.
The next time we may not be so...
The next time? You surely don't think
there will be a next time. And then it may not be suicide, but open murder. I cannot take any further share of the responsibility. I have tried, and I have failed every time.
And do you have a particular detective agency in mind?
Yes, I do. But if anyone has anything better to suggest...
We have wasted too much time already. Will you get into communication with these people straight away?
I will telephone the head of the firm this morning.
But you will use all possible discretion, will you not, Miss Vane?
The agency I had in mind was ostensibly a typing bureau, financed by Peter Wimsey, who employed it for some of his more discreet investigations. It was run by a woman who had played a vital part in the case of the murder of which I had stood accused, Kathleen Clempson.
I'm afraid that Miss Clempson is absent from town, engaged on a case. Would you care to speak to anyone else?
But Miss Clempson was the only member of the firm personally known to me, and I did not like to pour all the horrible details of the affair into the ears of a total stranger.
Ah, Miss Vane, I was looking for you.
Is something the matter, Mr. Vane?
See for yourself.
Your turn's coming. Nice to be warned, I suppose.
It fell out of one of my books just now.
When did you use the book last?
Well, that's the curious thing. Miss Hilliard borrowed it last night, and it was returned to me this morning by one of her students.
Did you give the book directly into Miss Hilliard's hands?
No, I put it into a pigeonhole before Hall.
So anybody might have got hold of it?
I suppose they could, yes.
Could Miss Devine have planted the letter herself? I simply had no idea where to turn for help. I'd said that I would go to the head of the firm, but the real head, the brains behind it, was Peter himself. Should I at least ask for his advice? I'd quite deliberately turned my mind away from him during the past months, sinking myself deeper and deeper into Oxford. He had, of course, sent me some weeks ago his inevitable All Fool's Day letter.
Dear Harriet, I send in my demand notes with the brutal regularity of the income tax commissioners. And probably you say, when you see the envelopes, oh, God, I know what this is.
He was quite right, of course.
Will you marry me? It's beginning to look like one of those lines in a farce, merely boring till it's said often enough, and after that it gets a bigger laugh each time it comes. I should like to write you the kind of words that burn the paper they are written on. But words like that have a way of being not only unforgettable, but unforgivable. You will burn this in any case, and I would rather there should be nothing in it you cannot forget if you want to. Well, that's over. Don't worry about it.
I had never known him to sound so bleakly unhappy.
My nephew, whom you have so kindly befriended, is cheering my Italian exile by dark hints that you are involved in some disagreeable and dangerous job of work in Oxford, about which he is in honour bound to say nothing.
He was hurt, of course, that I had confided in his nephew, whom I scarce knew, and told him nothing.
I hope he's mistaken. But I know that if you have put anything in hand, disagreeableness and danger will not turn you back. And God forbid that they should.
Not one man in 10,000 would have said that. It was an admission of equality I would never have expected of him. For a moment it occurred to me that if he conceived of marriage along those lines, then the whole question would have to be reviewed in that new light. But I'd turned down his proposal, thanking him for not telling me to run away and play. But now, rather perversely, I found myself resenting the fact that Peter was not around when I needed him. I put through a telephone call to his hotel in Rome. It took the best part of half a day to get a reply.
I am sorry, signorina, but his lordship is not in the hotel.
Do you know when he will be back?
Oh, he will not be back, signorina. He left for Warsaw 3 days ago.
How very unfortunate, particularly in view of the latest development.
What development?
The warden had a visit from Dr. Threep this afternoon. He's a member of our ruling council. He's been having lunch with the Vice-Chancellor, and the Vice-Chancellor has received an anonymous letter making accusations against the senior common room.
What kind of accusations?
He declined to go into details, but murder certainly figured among them. He dismissed it as the work of a harmless crank, of course, but if this goes on, it could make life rather awkward for us.
In the back of my address book, I came across the name of Freddy Arbuthnot, an old friend of Peter's, who would know how to contact him if anybody could. I wrote to him, enclosing a letter to Peter, asking him to forward it urgently to wherever Peter might be. The following day was a Saturday, heavy with distant thunder. I had a headache and felt out of sorts. I wandered round Oxford with no particular purpose in mind, looking at the shops and trying not to think very much. In the window of an antique shop, there was a set of ivory Chinese chessmen. Each piece was a complicated set of little revolving balls, delicate as fine lace. They were enchanting, and I wanted to go boldly in and buy them. But I put the temptation aside and moved on. That night the storm broke with a clap that shook the walls of my room. I flung my window open. There was a sweet smell of approaching rain.
It's cleared the air anyway.
And taken my headache with it, thank goodness. I'd like to do something calm and lovely and thoroughly Oxonian.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll toddle along like two good little people and listen to the university sermon. I can't think of anything more soothingly academic than that.
After the service, we walked out into the bright morning. Standing at the corner of Cat Street was a group of dons chattering animatedly, two fellows of All Souls and a distinguished figure I recognized as the Master of Balliol. Beside him was a figure in an M.A. gown, who, as the Dean and I passed by, turned and lifted his mortarboard.
Lovely morning, ain't it?
I found myself presenting Peter to the Dean in a sort of daze. How had he got here? And why hadn't he let me know?
If you happen to be free and in your college during the next half hour or so, may I come round and look you up?
That would be delightful.
Then I'll be round in 20 minutes.
Well, so that's the man.
Yes, that's him.
My dear, he's perfectly charming. You never said he was coming to Oxford.
I didn't know. I thought he was in Warsaw. I wrote to him giving an outline of what was going on at Shrewsbury. I don't know what the warden will think. I didn't expect him just to turn up like this.
I shouldn't say too much about it. Simply bring him along to High Table when he's free and let him turn the whole lot of us inside out. A man with manners like that could twist the whole SCR around his little finger. What a mercy he's an historian. That will put him on the right side of Miss Hilliard.
I never thought of him as an historian.
Well, he took a first. I'm told he was looked upon as one of the ablest scholars of his year, didn't you know?
No. I don't think I ever consciously connected him with Oxford. He's full of surprises.
Yes, I did get your letter. I didn't know whether you wished me to appear personally, but I was coming to Oxford anyway. I wanted to drop round and see you yesterday evening, but I got tied up with people.
What have you been doing with yourself?
Talking for all these interminable weeks. I'm a professional funny man at the Foreign Office.
What?
If some foreign dignitary feels offended or not sufficiently regarded, I take him out to lunch and tell him funny stories to put him in a good humour again. God, what a game.
You look as if you haven't slept for weeks.
I must assure that I have, now you come to mention it. We all thought at one point that the balloon was going up. I got as far as saying to Bunter one night, "It's coming. Back to the army again, Sergeant." But in the end, you know, it made a noise like a hoop and rolled away.
For the time being.
Well, it's a relief to get back and find you here, and Oxford going on as it used to. If only one could root oneself in here among the grass and stones and do something worthwhile.
But, Peter, you're saying exactly what I've been feeling all this time. Can it be done?
No, it can't be done. There are moments when one comes back and thinks it might. I haven't yet properly thanked you for being so kind to St. George.
Have you seen him yet?
No. I threatened to descend on him tomorrow and show him a damn disinheriting countenance. He's gone off today with a party of friends. I know what that means. He's getting thoroughly spoilt.
Well, you can't wonder he's terribly good-looking.
He's a precocious little monkey. Now, I can't blame him for that. It runs in the blood. But it's characteristic of his impudence that he should have gate-crashed your acquaintance after you have always firmly refused to meet any of my people.
I found him for myself, you see.
Well, since you've met one member of the family, why don't you come down to Denver and see the place before the new civilization grows on it like the jungle? They'll tell you I don't care a damn for the whole outfits, and I don't know that I do. But I was born there, and I shall be sorry if I live to see the land sold off for ribbon building and the hall turned over to some Hollywood colour talky king.
I've never heard you talk like this before. I didn't realise you cared.
Oh, it's very easy for me to care, because I'm not called upon to do a hand's turn in the matter. I don't envy St. George when he inherits it all. Only I do have a certain hankering after certain musty old values.
I understand. And I'd like to see your home.
Would you? Then we'll go one of these days.
But...
No, don't worry, don't worry. I won't inflict the family on you. So I think you'd rather like my mother. We'll choose a time when they're all away, except a dozen or so harmless dukes in the family vault. Oh, great Scott, look at the time. Oh, dear, look, you let me maunder on and we haven't said a word about your Shrewsbury problem.
I've been only too thankful to forget it for a bit.
As I dare say you have. Listen, Harriet, couldn't we make today a holiday? I've got this lunch with the master at Balliol, but why don't we meet at 3 o'clock and take a punt from Magdalen Bridge?
If this were 20 years ago, I should say you were going on the river.
I am. Hand in hand with a statelier past.
I'm afraid you're making yourself conspicuous. No sunbathing costume, no coloured beach sandals. You are clothed, clean and cool, on a Sunday afternoon too. I hope at least the parcel under your arm contains records of crooners.
It was, in fact, my poison pen poltergeist diary which I wanted Peter to take away and study. He was waiting for me, immaculately dressed in the manner of an Oxford engraving, and handed me ceremoniously into the punt.
Is it your pleasure to go up or down?
I felt the need of shade and solitude and chose to go downstream, but an ugly shock awaited us.
Good God!
What's the matter?
I struck something terrible. Can't you smell it? It is scandalous the way corpses follow me about.
My dear idiot, it's only the corporation garbage dump.
A garbage dump? It is simply criminal. Let's get away from here. There's no romance left on this river.
The Isis was thick with overcrowded punts and whining gramophones. We put in under the shade of an overhanging willow, but even there we were not left in peace.
Why, look there! If it isn't Lord Peter Wimsey!
A contingent of American ladies, whose leader claimed to know Peter, came paddling across to look at us. Peter behaved with his customary urbanity, while I heartily wished them all at the bottom of the river. After what seemed like an eternity, they paddled off again.
Well, girls, didn't I tell you he was the perfect English aristocrat?
I think I'd better give up being the perfect English aristocrat and become the great detective again. Perhaps I should have a glance through your dossier after all. I'm curious to see what kind of a sleuth you make when left to yourself.
He curled up among the cushions while I studied his half-averted face. The glitter of close-cropped hair where the neck muscles lifted to meet the head. An almost imperceptible beading of sweat on the upper lip.
What is it? Is something the matter?
No, nothing at all. So it has happened. But it happened long ago. The only thing is that now I have to admit it to myself. I've known it for some time. But does he know it?
Well, Harriet, it's not a pretty problem.
And it simply can't go on. Tell me what to do, Peter.
Well, there are two possibilities. You can plant spies all over the place and wait to pounce when the next incident occurs.
But you don't know how difficult a place it is to police. And suppose we don't catch her and something horrible happens.
I agree. The other, and I think the better way, is to do what we can to frighten this lunatic into keeping quiet while we dig out the motive behind the whole thing. I'm sure it's not mere blind malignity. There's method to it.
Isn't it all too painfully obvious? Pent-up, frustrated sexual energy.
No, Harriet, it's not. You're not thinking clearly. Isn't it a fact that having more or less made up your own mind to a spot of celibacy, you are eagerly peopling the cloisters with bogies?
We're not talking about me and my feelings. We're talking about all these beastly goings-on in college.
But you can't keep your feelings out of the case. It's no use saying that sex is at the bottom of all these phenomena. Sex ain't a separate thing functioning away all by itself. It's usually found attached to a person of some sort.
I would have thought that was self-evident.
I simply wish you could clear this personal preoccupation from your mind. My dear, what are you afraid of? You're in no danger. If you want to set up your everlasting rest, you are more likely to find it in the life of the mind than in the life of the heart.
You say that?
I say that. It's your needs we are considering, not anybody else's.
Peter, I seem to be behaving very stupidly. But the reason why I want to get clear of people and feelings and go back to the intellectual side is that it is the only side of life I haven't betrayed and made a mess of.
Yes, I understand that. And it's upsetting to think it may betray you in its turn. But why should you think that? Even if much learning makes one person mad, it need not make everybody mad. All these women are beginning to look abnormal to you because you don't know which one to suspect. But actually, even you don't suspect more than one.
No, but I'm beginning to think that almost any of them might be capable of it.
Will you give me tomorrow to think it over? I fancy I see one or two lines that might be followed up with profit.
I would rather trust you than anybody.
Thank you, Harriet. Shall we now resume our interrupted holiday? And here are the ducks coming up, the remains of our sandwiches. Oh, my lost youth. 23 years ago, I fed these identical ducks with these identical sandwiches. How fleeting are all human passions compared with the massive continuity of ducks. Be off, collies. That's the lot.
What is it? What's the matter?
It's Carrie, madam.
Oh, well, come in, for goodness sake.
We're sorry to wake you, madam, but the dean said to come and tell you. Annie and me have been so frightened. We nearly caught it.
Caught it?
The ghost, or whatever you call it, in the science lecture room, madam.
And it's gone off rampaging something horrible. It may be murdering people this very minute.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Carrie. Where is the dean?
Waiting by the door of the science lecture room. She said to fetch you.
All right, let's be off and you can tell me all about it on the way.
I was in bed fast asleep and Annie wakes me up and says that...
Just a minute. Let Annie tell her part herself.
I woke up at about 1:30 and happened to look out of my window and I saw a light on in the science lecture room and a shadow on the curtain like somebody moving about.
But when we got there, the door was locked.
But it's got a glass panel and I looked through and I saw something all in black crouched over a table.
And I tried to see it too, but I must have jogged Annie's elbow against the door because it rattled and the light went out.
So I told Carrie to go and fetch the dean while I kept a lookout.
Oh, but here she is. She can tell me the rest herself.
I'm sorry to have dragged you out. Our friend's got away, I'm afraid. The dark room window's open. She must have climbed through. So what do we do now, Mr. Holmes?
I didn't want to go in through the darkroom window for fear of disturbing any evidence, so I smashed the panel at the door, wrapped a scarf round my hand and turned the key. I knocked the light switch on with my torch.
There's a newspaper and a paste pot on the table.
And a box of cut-out letters.
This must be where she does it.
It seems unnecessarily public. Why can't she do it in her own room? Did you get a look at her face when you peeped in, Annie?
No, madam, not to recognise. She was wearing some black thing and was sitting with her back to the door.
I think you and Carrie may as well go back to bed. The dean and I will see to the rest.
Yes, madam. Good night, madam.
Good night, madam.
Good night.
Good night.
So, what do we do now?
I'll lock the door and remove the key. I'd rather like a second opinion.
Your exquisite gentleman?
I think we'd better have him round here as soon as decency permits.
We haven't been able to come up with much in the fingerprint line, I'm afraid. And Bunter has been all over the floor on his hands and knees. It's shockingly bad for one's trousers. And he came up with these long black hairpins.
No, they're not mine. I use bronze ones. So does Miss Lydgate, I think.
I know who uses black ones like this. I once had the pleasure of sticking them in for her.
Mr. Vine! Of course! So like the White Queen, dropping pins all over the place. But why should she come in here? She never consults scientific texts.
She was still working in her room when I came across here last night.
Did you see her?
No, I only meant that her reading lamp was on.
Which doesn't exactly establish an alibi. By the way, did you notice that the letter on the table was addressed to you? Take a look.
You needn't think you'll get me. You make me laugh, you...
At which point, presumably, she was disturbed. The epithet can be supplied from the remaining letters in the box, but they're mostly Q's and K's and Z's, and such like unhandy consonants.
I'm going to have to leave you, I'm afraid. I've got too many pesky problems waiting in my room. 3 late without leaves and 2 gramophones out of doors. Now, Lord Peter, it is agreed that we shall have the honour of seeing you with us at High Table this evening.
The honour is mine.
And I trust you will join us afterwards for coffee in the senior common room.
I'm looking forward to it.
Goodbye, then.
Goodbye.
Have we finished here, do you think?
Oh, yes. We're not going to discover anything else. We have found here only what we were intended to find.
Would you care for a tour of the college, to take in the more important battlefields?
I should particularly like to see the hall and library, and the connection between them. Miss Barton's room, the layout of the chapel, and the way from the Queen Elizabeth's building to the new quad. Mm-hmm.
Oh, good heavens! Did you sit up all night with the dossier?
No, I woke rather early. But don't tell Bunter, he'll become too solicitous.
And have you come to any particular conclusion?
There are a few points whose significance you may have overlooked. One, you and Mr. Vine meet at Shrewsbury for the first time at the Gordy, and the first letter is put into your gown that evening. 2, the people attacked are nearly all dons and scholars. 3, all the letters received by post come either on a Monday or a Thursday. And 4, the dress found on the dummy was never seen in college. Do all these facts taken together suggest nothing to you?
They suggest a lot of things separately, but I can't make anything of them taken together.
Well, mull them over in your mind. Shall we go?
And so we made our tour, doing our best, not very successfully, to try not to draw too much attention to ourselves. I could make out very little of what was passing in Peter's mind. He seemed somewhat abstracted from the matter in hand.
I fancy that you may have little more trouble at night.
Why do you say that?
Well, for one thing, the nights are getting rather short, and the risks are rather great. All the same, I think you should take some personal precautions.
Are you serious?
For once, I am. I dare say I'm flattering myself, but I fear my presence may not pass unnoticed, and our friend may grow rather alarmed. And I don't like her preoccupation with knives and strangling.
Very well, I'll be careful.
I won't offer you a revolver to take a bed with you, but I have an idea that from now on you and at least one other person may be in danger of attack.
Aren't you rather exaggerating the whole thing? You don't usually get the wind up like this.
I do, though, quite often. But if it's only my risk, I can afford to let it blow. When it comes to other people...
Your instinct is to clap the women and children under hatches.
Well, one can't suppress one's natural instincts altogether.
Peter, it's a shame. Let me introduce you to some nice little woman who adores being protected.
I should be wasted on her. Besides, she would always be deceiving me in the kindest manner for my own good, and that I could not stand. I object to being tactfully managed by somebody who ought to be my equal.
I'll bear it in mind.
Well, I'd better push off now. I'll be round to face the high table at 7 o'clock. I must admit, I'm rather looking forward to it.
I'm sure you will find it a stimulating experience.
Rather more than that, I hope. I don't pretend that I shall nail your poltergeist tonight, but I trust that I shall at least discover her motive.
In Gaudy Night by Dorothy L. Sayers, Lord Peter Wimsey was played by Ian Carmichael and Harriet Vane by Joanna David. The Warden, Jill Balkan. The Dean, Francis Jeter. Miss Lydgate, Elizabeth Proud. Miss Devine, Sarah Lawson. Miss Hilliard, Elizabeth Bell. Miss Barton, Carolyn Jones. Annie Wilson, Angela Sims. Miss Newland, Nicola Holmes. Viscount St. George, Tom George. Paget, Don McCorkindale. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Gaudy Night was dramatised by Michael Bakewell and directed for BBC Audiobooks by Enid Williams.